This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is The Bigger Picture, and I'm Carla Sapsford Newman. Today, I'm privileged to have Deborah Henry, spokeswoman for UNHCR, UN High Commission for Refugees, speaking about the Fuji's Refugee School for Somali Children. Deborah was also Miss Malaysia World 2007 and Miss Universe Malaysia 2011. So as of end of May 2013, there are some 104,070 refugees and asylum seekers registered with the UN High Commission for Refugees here in Malaysia. Of these, 1,170 are Somali. To shed light on this issue and to discuss a local school for Somali refugees, we'll be talking with Deborah Henry. She's brought two of her students to the studio, Mango and Yasmin. So welcome.
Hi, thanks for having us.
As a background, there are about 7.6 million refugees in the world as of 2012, and a person is estimated to be displaced every 4.1 seconds. So we wanted to learn more about the Fuji School and your work there.
Well, it actually started back in 2008. I was already very interested in social work, social investment, and I'd studied that at university as well. So I was actually contacted by UNHCR to host an in-house documentary for them. And that's when I was really introduced to the refugee issue in Malaysia. I knew they lived here from various countries, but I didn't know in what capacity. I didn't know how their lives were, the challenges children faced. So we visited actually four families. One family was a Somali family, four siblings. I was really devastated because I went to their home and they were sitting at home. They lived with their grandmother. They had nothing, no access to education. Absolutely, you know, they were just so closed up. Their minds were shut down. And I think it was that point after the interview when I walked out of that apartment, I remember thinking to myself, I can't let this go. I can't walk away and just not do anything about it and forget it. And it was that point, mid-2008, that we started tutoring this family, English and math. And we did that for about 6 months. And then the following year in 2009, in May, we started Fuji School. So that was a little bit more official. We had a principal. We opened our doors to a lot of the other refugee kids living in that area. And we started the school with about 60 kids. It was one of those situations where I had raised a little bit of money from some previous charitable event. And so we had some startup funds. But more so than worrying about how are we going to run the school in the long term? Where do we get money from? Where do we get support from? I was in this zone where I'm going to do it. I need to do it. And we're just going to start. So I remember like literally the first week of school, we did not even have the money to buy tables and chairs. And it was funny, like a last minute Canadian donor came in. They gave us just enough money to pop down to the shops and order the chairs and tables for school. So I personally feel it's been a very blessed initiative, the whole school idea and working with the community, because at all these times you reach points where we're like, oh my goodness, how are we going to survive? How are we going to do this? And something, it's like a miracle, something amazing happens that takes us, you know, to the next month, to the next year, takes us a further. So that's really how it's been for the longest time. But like speaking today, I am very optimistic because I see the results. To me, the biggest reward, something that really puts a smile on my face, is when I see students, like we have two of them here today with us, to see them in this capacity and how far they've come, their motivation, their drive, their eagerness to learn, to grow, to be empowered. And that to me it makes everything worth it.
Generally, Somali immigrants are Muslim. Does this help their integration here in Malaysia?
Somali refugees started coming here in the early 2000s. I only really got to know about the community in 2008. And the numbers have been, I think, sort of fairly consistent, give and take a few, because a lot of them do get resettled and some do go back to Somalia. But essentially, it's sort of a transit point for them. They'll stay here. UNHCR plays a big role in documenting and processing them, and eventually they get resettled to sort of a final destination, as it were. It's difficult, you know. I mean, I always try to find the simplest way to explain the life of a refugee in Malaysia and in many parts of the world. And it really is, in Malaysia, it's really children don't have access to formal learning, which is such a handicap for any child to have, especially in today's world. And adults can't work, whether they're qualified or not. They can't hold jobs that earn them an income. So for parents, you know, you feel so demotivated because you can't provide for your families. You can't take care of your children. The basic things you can't give as a mother and a father. And I can imagine how damaging that would be to someone's character, to their self-esteem. And a lot of the community, I always say they're like prisoners within their own homes. You know, they can't really go anywhere. They can't really do anything. They don't have the finances to. And it makes life really difficult. And it just makes life very uncertain. You don't know how long you're going to be in Malaysia for. You don't know when you're going to get resettled. You don't know what's going to come tomorrow. So life is very much up in the air. And I think especially for young people, for children, for teenagers, you know, it can be very destabilizing. And it can affect so many aspects of their life. I think help comes from everyone. It comes from a lot of the private sector. In the case of the school, it's individuals who come to visit Fuji School and they see the work we do. They meet the children. They see how happy the kids are at the school, and they actually understand and believe in what we're doing, and they support us and help us.
And is there much official support for these refugees?
Yes. I mean, we get support from United UNHCR, but in terms of anything more official than that, no. You know, we do our own thing. We raise our own funds through various ways. We work together with the refugee community. We, as part from the children, we also like to help the other individuals. So some of them, they come and work part-time within Fuji School. And we definitely only rely on really public individuals.
How does your work for UNHCR figure into the work that you're doing at the Fuji School?
It's more in a advocacy capacity. So when they have World Refugee Day, if they have any events on that they need assistance with, I lend a hand, I will MC for them, or I'll do an interview for the radio or for newspapers, magazines, photo shoots, for instance. So it's more in that capacity. And we've done a few videos. We actually did one which was like a replica of the Angelina Jolie video, which they actually, I think they showed it on television and online last year. So various things.
Can you tell us a bit about your educational curriculum for the students, how you came up with that and where you put your emphasis? And what materials do you use?
Well, we don't follow a proper official syllabus, as it were, because we are like a tuition center in a way. So we actually have an education coordinator. She's a teacher and she puts together the curriculum for us. We use various textbooks, local and international textbooks, and we do teacher training. And we come up with our own exams and our own ways of sort of measuring the students, assessing the students and the impact of the syllabus that we're having with them. Our goal with Fuji School is really preparing them for the real world, a global education, because they're Somali. They're now living in Malaysia and they're going to end up God knows where, in America, in Europe, in Australia. So we can't, you know, there isn't a point teaching them a certain language that they're really not going to use or about a certain culture that is going to become irrelevant. So we really try to touch on a few different topics. And really, because they've come from Somalia, it's also a more conservative environment and they're not as exposed to certain things in the world. So really this time in Malaysia, we wanted to be that. We want to get them, you know, switched on, empowered. We want to be able to have critical thinking with the students so they know how to process, they know how to assess, well, what do I like? What do I not like? What do I want in life? And even if they're chucked into a situation, say in, I don't know, somewhere in America where it's very liberal and they're kind of struggling, they know how to then manage themselves, their culture, their identity, and things like that. So education for us is academic, it's life skills training, and it's also creative and physical learning. So we try to focus on all these different topics. We do things like performing arts with KL Pack. We also have dance steps, a dance school. They take about 20 of our kids in and teach them dancing and that. So it's a lot about expression, creativity. We want to expose our kids to as much as we can. It's like any child, you know, I guess to any mother out there, the things that you would like to provide for your child, that's what we want to provide for these kids. So access and exposure.
Thank you, Deborah. I'm speaking today with Deborah Henry, spokeswoman for the UN High Commission for Refugees and benefactor of the Fuji's Refugee School for Somali Children here in KL. Coming up, we'll hear a bit more about how she raises funds and some of the aspirations that she has for these children. You're listening to The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon, if you've just joined us. This is The Bigger Picture, and I'm Carla Sapsford Newman. Been speaking with Deborah Henry, spokeswoman for the UN High Commission for Refugees and benefactor of the Fuji's Refugee School for Somali Children. We left off discussing the curriculum of the school. Now we'll hear from two of the school's star pupils. Deborah, can you introduce our young guest, please?
Sure, Carla. We have Mango, Muhammad Mango. Very cute name indeed. Yeah. He's with us. And we also have Yasmin here today. They've both been with Fuji School for quite a few years now. And some of they're our top students. They do really well in school. They participate in a lot of the activities and projects that we have going on. So, hi guys. Welcome.
Yeah, thank you. My name is Muhammad. I would like to introduce myself. I have a small topic here. How do I change my life? The topic is out of the darkness into the light. Being in Somalia. In Somalia, I have not enough education because it was less important. Surviving was more important than learning. The school was unreliable, which is 2 days open and 3 days closed. 1 week, twice you went. Suddenly, my auntie bring us to Malaysia and we get better education, better life. I had put light back into my eyes and into my life also. Now I have the skills to help the others, which is uneducated people with pride, to help bring light into their lives. I'm so glad to have this opportunity today. First day I was coming in Malaysia, even I don't know how to say how are you. Now I'm very glad that I can interact other people.
Thank you, Mango. Yasmin, what's your topic today?
Hello, everyone. My topic is all about learning. I learned in school that you never stop learning. It is a never-ending life process. It doesn't matter how old you are, how rich or poor you are, or even how far. People think that going to school is a normal thing, but to me, something great and wonderful it brings. It has changed my life, my future, and my family's too. Opportunity is something that should be given to him, to her, and even to you. Opportunity opens all doors. It has given hope to my future, and it will also to yours. Being rich in the mind is the most important thing in the life, no matter how poor you are from outside. Just always be rich from your mind, like say I'm rich, and I will continue learning. That's the way.
Thank you very much. Can we pick up on one of the things you've said, Mango? Life in Somalia was extremely difficult and often traumatic. How does that impact your ability to learn once you arrived in Malaysia as you carry these memories with you?
In Somalia, the rules is the school is open. Just like we pay 1 month, we just learn 3 days or 2 days. If you learn also, you will not benefit because you are in busy city, which is fighting together, which is can hear many signs of others. So that means even you cannot think that you can get education. Like you are thinking that your future is lost. Like you are in this trouble. When this trouble will finish? How you change your life and how can you be what you want? How can you get what you want? So it was quite complicated.
Is it accurate to say, Deborah, that many of these students have to overcome many difficulties far beyond just learning the curriculum? And how can they learn when they've got so much going on in their heads?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, learning is, it's not as easy as just going and sitting in a class and, you know, learning how to add 2 + 2. It's when these kids are in a difficult, traumatic situation, like you mentioned, it harms them in many, many ways, psychologically, emotionally, mentally, and just capacities. When you lose out on critical years of learning, you can't just catch up like that. It's not that easy. So we have students in the school who they've attended for a couple of years and they just give up because it's just too hard. They've lost out on so many years and their capacity is not there. And then we have some other students, like for instance Yasmin and Mango, who are fortunate enough that they catch up, they learn fast, they know, they just can absorb things quicker. And the kids don't really talk a huge amount about the past, the trauma, the things they witnessed back in Somalia. And it's just kind of, it is what it is. They went through it, they experienced it. And this is something that we saw when we first opened. We saw a very clear example of this. Very often our families give us a piece of paper with crayons and say like, sit in the corner and just draw and sketch away, and that's like entertainment. We did that with the students and they drew nothing on this paper. And I was shocked. I was like, but you know, sun, star, flowers, what are your hobbies? And I was giving them all these examples of what they could draw with the crayons and nothing was translating. And I was going, oh my goodness, how is this possible? And then I realized creativity, imagination, allowing the mind to just be and to explore, that didn't exist for them because they literally fighting and gunshots and survival skills, that was the most important. They didn't dream, they didn't think about the impossible and things like that. So for sure, ideally, we would like to have trained people come in and work with our kids and really help them, like improve their motor skills. And kids who have maybe small disabilities, to really help them along. That would be the ideal situation. But of course, it's access to a lot of these resources is difficult. So we do what we can and we try to work with the children who are more challenged a bit closer. But yeah, when any kid has missed out on 3-4 years of learning, the catch up is just difficult.
Do either of you have anything to add about how you overcame your difficult history in Somalia?
Actually, first time I came here, I didn't know about anything Malaysian language or anything. And then finally, I didn't know about schools. When I was a kid, I used to go to school. And then I didn't know the school was so important for me. I just used to go play. I was like, normal thing. I don't care about school, damn, yeah. And then finally, I stopped 1 year for school. I realized that school is very important for me. And also it's important for my future. My mother, she used to say always like, this school is very important for you. You need to study hard, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, no, I don't want it. It's fine, you know. And then I realized it now that school is very important for me and my future.
So looking at you both in the studio, you're both smiling with glowing faces. I've been to the school and it reminds me of the fun, laughing students I saw there. So how can students be so happy when their past is so sad?
But this is exactly what we love. And that's why I say to anyone, you know, come and visit the school and meet the kids and see what we do, because it does change the way a person thinks. And I mean, the children are our testament. They validify what we're doing. And when people come and they see them and they're enjoying learning and they're happy and they love being at Fuji School, then that says that, you know, obviously we're doing something right. It's not perfect, but it's right. And that's what it should be. You know, very often people, when they view NGO work and charity work and all this kind of, you know, helping less fortunate or disadvantaged, they expect this really sad, traumatic photos of like poor, starving, you know, sad looking children. It's true. It's a reality. We see this on YouTube. We see this on TV. And we're trying to say, look, hey, we're helping people who need sort of a little hand, some assistance in life. And we're trying to empower them so they can go on to have full lives. But this is not charity. This is not like serving poor thing, let's help them. It's not that. And they need to see the happiness. They need to see that empowerment that we're doing, which is why Fuji's, it's all about that. It's all about empowerment. It's strength. It's showing the positivity of a future of hope. And you see that if you look at our website, fujischool.com, in any of the work that we do, it's always about uplifting someone and showing the strength of someone. That despite, the kids are the testament, despite what you can go through in life as a child, some things that no child should have to endure and experience. But despite that, they can sit here today and to share their story and to be sort of empowered individuals who have value, who know they have value. And that gives me comfort, because I know that wherever they go in life, Mango and Yasmin, they will experience challenges, but I know they'll be okay. And I have that sort of that comfort within me.
And can you talk about what success looks like for the Fuji School students?
Yes. We have one of our students, he was actually the first family that I taught back in 2008. His name is Ahmed. He's quite bright and he's kind of gone through our system. So we've had this thing in the school called the buddy system, where we encourage the older kids to be able to reinvest back into the system that worked for them. So now we have Ahmed teaching the kindy classes. So we do teacher training with him. He comes in, he works on his teaching manual, and he comes and teaches the kids. And this is really positive because A, it shows us that we did something right, and he obviously wants to come and invest back in a system that was successful for him. B, it also encourages a lot of the other students, because they see a fellow student doing something like this and he earns a little bit of a pocket money on the side, and so they get encouraged. They see a future and they see hope, and it's real. That was really good for the school. We also have had students who've been resettled to America and to Australia, and we've heard back from the settlement officers in those countries. We've heard really good stories, like so-and-so's, his talent, his skills are really good, passed his exams, and now he's been put into like an appropriate level at school. So they were actually very impressed by their English levels, by their confidence, their life skills. Were really very important for us, because it really goes, okay, then there's obviously these kids are leaving here and they are retaining what they've learned with us.
And what percentage of the students will get out?
It's been kind of slow, actually, for the past few years. I think last year, early this year, we had maybe a handful of families get resettled. So we did actually lose quite a few kids. It's a bittersweet moment for us, because we're so happy to see them go to like a new life that's more permanent, but sad because they've been with us for many years. So we do feel really upset about it. And that's why when people ask about the school, we can't give give them proper answers because we're like, the school's going to be here as long as they are here, and we don't know how long that's going to be. And to get resettled, sometimes you get a couple of months' notice, 6 months, and you have to kind of like, okay, you're going to be resettled to Colorado or something like that in the heart of winter. So it's as and when, and we don't even know.
Refugee kids are here through no fault of their own. Do you personally believe refugee students should be given citizenship?
You see examples of this in other countries, and yes, once you ratify that convention, you are subject to all the mandate that comes with it. And I'm not sitting here saying, oh, a government should sign it and should be party to it, but I am saying that you do have, in some countries, a large number of refugees living there, and ignoring the situation is not going to solve it. Because in any society, when you have a group of people who, for instance, are unemployed or are not occupied, teenagers, youth, even adults, that can lead to social ills. So it has to be dealt with. In Malaysia, there are loads of refugee schools out there who work tirelessly with various refugee communities, and they do a good deed because they're doing something that others aren't. Teaching education is every child's right. To me, the fact that a whole bunch of children, like our school, we have over 100 kids, would not have access to school, that to me is just not acceptable. Not in the 21st century where we have so much resource and we can't even teach a bunch of children. And that will not just destroy their lives, but their families' lives and for generations to come. And we know this. This is a fact. So education for kids, it's not something to be even debated. It's a must. But I think countries, governments, they can look into ways to allow for certain things to happen. Maybe some form of informal employment, some form of access to education. They can work with the relevant bodies to make things a bit easier, I think. And I think even that would be appreciated, because no one's sitting here going, we all understand that there's two sides to the coin, and we're not saying you have to do this, but we're saying, come on, let's try to take a few steps forward, because certainly ignoring this issue and not dealing with it is not going to solve anyone's problem.
Currently, refugee law in Malaysia does not discriminate between refugees and illegal immigrants. In popular perception, however, foreigners are bad and often criminals. So what can be done about this perception?
And this is true. Many people I speak to who don't really understand what a refugee is, they think they lump everyone together, economic migrant, refugee, everyone's one and the same. It's so important to distinguish between the two. These people, refugees, don't come here just to get a better job and to have a better life financially. They come here because they are running away, fleeing for their lives of their family, security, based on various threats of race, religion, persecution, based on political views. So it's a lot more serious than people understand. And I always say to people, put yourself in someone else's shoes. If tomorrow you had to run away because someone was coming after you, what would you do? What would you expect another country to do for you and to save the lives of your children and your loved ones? And when it becomes that real, then people actually don't know how to answer that question. It's all about education, which is why for us at Fuji School, yes, a number one focus is to obviously fundraise, to run the school, to give these kids the best that we can. But the other part is awareness and advocacy. We always use this opportunity to tell people to share and the story of refugees in Malaysia and around the world so people can actually understand. And like I say, once people come to the school, they meet the kids, they talk to us, they change. They see things and they understand things in a very different way. So it really comes down to, like they say, what you don't know, you don't know. So the first thing it starts with being informed, being empowered. Once you have that knowledge, you understand issues better. And which is why, you know, for us, for the past 4 or 5 years, this is what we do. We talk about it and we hope that more and more people understand what it means. And I always say, compassion, put yourself in someone else's shoes. And that really helps you to understand what life is like for someone else.
So you have about 100 students at the moment. So how do you raise money to keep their educations going?
We raise funds through various fundraisers. We have a Send Me to School campaign where you can sponsor child's education for a year. That's 750 ringgit per year. And we do various other fundraisers. The current one we actually have, which is quite a fun fundraiser, it's called the Step Out campaign. We work together with Marion Counter, Miss Nina, and myself with a local shoe designer, John, under the label Zeng by Zeng. And we've designed 6 pairs of shoes, ladies' shoes, that we're selling online. And really cool designs, very chic, only 149 ringgit, so very affordable. And the profits go to the Fuji School. So we try to do really different fundraisers where, you know, people can buy a gorgeous pair of shoes, they can enjoy wearing the shoes, look stylish, but also support education in the process. So that fundraisers, you can check out fashionballet.com or zengbyzeng.com. Z-N-G by Z-N-G. A bit complicated. .com, and then you can see the whole collection and you can buy online for that.
And Deborah, what would you like us to take away from these stories?
To me, it always comes back to the children. Like you said, they end up in such difficult circumstances that they never asked for. Very often it's everybody else's doing and they suffer the most as children. And not having education is like a child with no water, with no food, with no shelter. It's that crucial for survival and for the chance of a positive future. So to me, it's every child has the right to an education. Learning is so, so important. Depriving a child of that is really taking away their life from them. And so I just encourage everyone and find your own way to help out. Find a cause that is close to your heart, that connects to you, but don't look at things through a tinted lens. Be informed, learn about something. And for me, it's been so personal because when I see the lives being transformed every day, every year, and you see them grow up, what they become and how empowered they are, my goodness, that to me, it's everything is worth it. And to give someone worth, a child, a man, a woman, no matter who you are and whatever walk of life, when someone makes you feel valued and makes you feel important, that changes everything for someone. And I've experienced that, and I'm sure you have, and everyone listening. So to give someone value and worth, to say to them that you're important, you matter, it's really the difference between life and death.
Thank you, Deborah. Thank you, Mango, and thank you, Yasmin.
Thank you so much, Carla.
Thank you.
I've been speaking with Deborah Henry and two of her students. Deborah is a spokeswoman for the UN High Commission for Refugees, and she's been talking about her work with the Fujis Refugee School for Somali Children. And you've been listening to The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.